Franco's Aid proudly presents our unscripted podcast, Voices of Hope. In this first season, you'll hear from extraordinary individuals whose support and service are making a difference. They may look different from each other and come from very different backgrounds, but the one thing they have in common is their love and respect for Haiti. On tonight's episode, we speak to Larry Arbuthnot, Franco's Aid's newly elected board chair. Here is our interview.
Hi, Larry. Welcome to Franco's Aid's Voices of Hope podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start off. Please introduce yourself to the world, if you will, and just share an interesting or fun fact about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Larry Arbuthnot. I live in Washington, D.C. I began my journey with Franco's Aid as an intern back in 2012. And now serve on the board, most recently elected board chair only just last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So tell me, what was your view of or connection to Haiti before Franco's Aid?
Right. So both my parents are Haitian. I was born and raised in a household that was very proud of our Haitian heritage. I was born in the States myself, but growing up, a lot of my family time was spent, and even family friends was spent at kind of Haitian gatherings, celebrating our food, our music, our culture. So even though I actually never made it to Haiti until I was 21, actually only a week before the earthquake or so, I was raised with a pretty profound appreciation for and love for my culture, and that was really important to me, because I think it's a beautiful place and a beautiful culture. So having that grounding has always been, again, a very, very important part of my life.
Yeah, I can imagine. Is there any particular dish that's your favorite?
I am a big fan of jonjon, for sure.
Explain to folks what that is.
Yeah, jonjon is a type of mushroom rice. I think it's a black mushroom. You use that mushroom, you soak it, and then you cook the rice in the soaked mushroom water. I've never made it myself, so I don't know. That's as far as I can go in explaining how it is.
But you enjoy eating it, though.
I do.
Oh, that's awesome.
In terms of meats, I'll probably go with either griot, which is that kind of sliced pork.
Okay.
Sliced and grilled pork or goat, cabrit. It's really, really tasty. When I was living in Haiti for a bit, I ate both in copious amounts.
So had you eaten those foods prior to going to Haiti for the first time, or was it your first time when you went to Haiti?
Yeah, definitely griot and jonjon. The goat was less common. I think I would see it occasionally, but did not come across it that often when I was growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And where did you grow up in the States?
I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in a suburb of New York. My parents both worked in Manhattan my whole life. So I was about an hour outside of the city.
Okay. All right. Okay. So how did you first hear about and become involved with Franco's Aid then?
Yeah, actually rewinds back to 2012. I was wrapping up a job as a legal assistant at an American law firm in Paris. I had been accepted to grad school in New York later that year, beginning in August of 2012. And I had this big chunk of time where I said, like, what do I do with this before I go back to school? And for me, it was pretty clear that I wanted to go to Haiti and kind of connect with the land of my familial heritage, but also do so in a way that was furthering my own professional interests and understanding, how can you make a difference in places that have as much opportunity for support as Haiti. So I was looking at different kind of social organizations. I was looking at the Grameen Foundation. I think they had some social enterprise activities underway in Haiti at the time. Largely was looking to volunteer. And in the course of kind of that exploration, I came across Franco's Aid. And that's when I reached out via email to the team. I expressed interest, and I think they had on the website flagged like an intern program, a volunteer intern program. So that's how I got connected. And then I think I landed in Haiti in April of that year. Was doing some interesting work. I could tell you more about what I was doing. Well, sure. I was supporting two programs. One was a small medium enterprise lending platform called Zafin. I believe if it still exists, it exists in a different, slightly different form. But what I was working on at that point in time was kind of understanding kind of the clients and their needs, and also kind of building out a bit of the business strategy behind it. It was a pretty new program. So that was kind of one piece of the work I did. Super cool getting to travel and meet clients and see the impact of what we were providing to them in real time. And then the second piece was working on the microinsurance product that we piloted and experimented with, again, back in 2012. Microinsurance is a tough kind of program to sustain. So ultimately, I don't think it still exists, but I was there for the period of time when we were trying to understand its impacts and how it was being understood by some of our loan clients in regions across the country. So I was interviewing dozens of Fonkoze clients in rural communities as far north as Lembe, and it was just a really beautiful experience getting to kind of hear from them the impact of Fokoze and see it really up close and personal. In particular, just the staff, their commitment to the mission and the people, and how hard they worked. You know, I think it's easy for people from afar to kind of think of these organizations like Fonkoze really in an abstract sense, but when you see it in person, it all becomes real, and the people that you're serving, they become real. And I think that from that moment, it was really hard for me to ever say, you know, turn my back on Fonkoze, and that's why I've been involved since then.
Nice. And did you say that was 2012? So
2012, yep.
that's 2 years after the 2010 earthquake.
2 years, yeah. That was my second time in Haiti. My first time had been, you know, the holiday season right before the earthquake. Flew out a week before the earthquake, and then 2 years later, I came back to a very different country, obviously.
I was going to say, I was thinking about context, you know, what it seemed like when you were there before the earthquake, and then shortly after, a couple of years after. So I think you spoke to this a little bit, but what about Fonkoze's mission then resonated with you?
Yeah, I really like that it's an organization that is multifaceted. I think in my general understanding of kind of the world of social finance, I think one of the things that's challenging is when you lend people money, but don't provide them the tools and capacity building to kind of wrap that support in ways that make it sustainable and help them kind of digest the support more holistically. So when I see the microfinance organization, SFF, coupled with the foundation, all kind of, rooted in this super physical presence of like 40 plus branches across the country, it really, that combination and that presence, you know, especially in a place where there are those who come and go, and money and donations, you know, ebb and flow, to see the kind of consistency of the mission, you know, and literally kind of manifest physically through our investment in these centers around the country where people can come, and then from there, the community centers that branch out from those locations, all of that really was really, you know, was beautiful to see, and I think remains one of the reasons why I'm so proud to support Fonkoze, and that we are, you know, we are there for the long haul. We've been there for a long time, and we're invested physically in the country in ways that lots of other organizations, you know, aren't.
Yeah, that's great. Growing up, was there an emphasis on being charitable or being of service to others? Or is this something you developed on your own over the years?
Oh no, definitely. I think both of my parents, I think instilled in me a belief that you have to give back to your community. So, most of the kind of community service I did growing up was in my local community. Kind of hodgepodge of activities, volunteering at the local elder care center, doing some kind of environmental cleanup in parks, and but yeah, I think it was in undergrad, I definitely dabbled some in kind of working with underprivileged students who were thinking about going into were going to college but didn't have any role models in their life who could speak to that experience. So did some mentorship in that space, and did a little bit of tutoring of people who were thinking of trying to become U.S. citizens, helping them prepare for their citizenship tests. But no, I think the Fon Kwoze was the first time that I really made a long-term commitment to an organization, as opposed to kind of the smattering of things that I did in my former volunteer efforts.
So for those who maybe have never heard of Fon Kwoze, or if you just had 30 seconds to describe what or who Fon Kwoze is, how would you do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say that Fon Kwoze is a family of institutions committed to the support and development of Haiti's poorest, in particular women in rural parts of the country, recognizing that women are in Haiti the backbone of families and frankly the economic engine for large swaths of the population. So we stand with them on their journey out of poverty, and provide them with the tools and the resources that they need to succeed sustainably.
Well, that's good. Well said. Because we do a lot, so it's hard to sort of sum that up, but that was nicely done. So have there been any pivotal moments throughout your time with Fon Kwoze, and if so, have they changed your life or perspective on life?
Well, definitely, I would say being with Fon Kwoze over the last 10 years, while Haiti has also gone through a pretty wild time, I think has been interesting to see, because you also see the cycle of the world caring, and then not caring, and then caring again, and then not caring, and then not caring, and then not caring, and then caring again. I think so, all of that to digest when you are then actively involved in an organization that is committed in the long term, it's a just a unique vantage point, because in particular when you are committed to supporting these organizations and making sure that they remain robust and viable, a lot of what we're able to do depends on the climate that we operate in, both from the context on the ground, but also the willingness of others to support the cause and invest in the cause. And so I can't say that's changed my life specifically, but I'd say that has opened my eyes to the importance of there being Fon Kwoze that stick through, challenging missions and good times and bad, because the kind of global goodwill is real. I don't doubt that it's not genuine when it arrives, but it doesn't arrive in consistent ways. So you need people and organizations like Fon Kwoze who bridge the gaps between those moments and who stick with people in need, again, in good times and bad.
Here's a it might be a hard one to answer. If you had to describe the world today in three words, what would they be?
Oh Lord. The world today in three words. Unfortunately, it's a tough world right now, so the words jumping to my mind are not particularly positive. I think uncertain. It's an uncertain world given the number of things that are unfolding in real time that no one has a grasp on. No one, and I mean no one. There are experts and there are prognosticators and pundits, but everything right now that's changing, I think, is there. These are forces that can't be understood in their kind of totality by anybody. So, uncertain is one. Vulnerable is two. I think there's a lot of good in this world. And lots of people trying to do good, but I think the all of this change and this climate of difficulty means that it's easy for those who have bad intentions to exploit the moment for their own benefit. So the world, I think, is very vulnerable right now to bad actors. And I guess the last thing I'll just say is it's interconnected in a way that we never were before as well. So
Okay. Yeah. So uncertain, vulnerable, and interconnected. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for those answers. So then what changes do you believe would make the world a better place?
I definitely think right now, one of my biggest concerns with the world is the information landscape and where and how people get their news and how trust in institutions and in facts and news has shifted. I think there are now almost kind of you can't debate anything because people are just debating from different sets of facts. And I don't know how you solve that when the internet makes it really easy for people to live in their own bubbles and not speak to each other. So I think that's my answer as to how the world becomes a better place is for us to figure out how we, avoid labels and, broad characterizations and put people back into contact with each other in ways that force, empathy and force, conversation and realizing that, yes, there can be very, real philosophical differences on issues that you don't have to bridge all the time, but the sense that people are bad because you disagree with them is a really just pernicious thing happening right now.
I concur. So what is your wish for Haiti and its future, in particular with Funkose?
Yeah, I mean, I think my wish for Haiti is that the people of Haiti be given a chance to meaningfully, chart its future course. Haiti, obviously, for over two centuries, has been a playground for influence from others around the world. Funkose is a non-political institution, and I think that's really important. We don't take sides. We support the people of Haiti, full stop. But I think, Haiti needs stability and safety, because without those two things, you can't listen to the will of the people. You can't have a functioning democracy without safety and security. So I think that's the first thing you need. And then maybe with that, if we can get back to that, hopefully in not too long, I think you need a process that transitions Haiti economically, that invests in Haiti strategically. I think there's a lot of short-term thinking, short-term investment, short-term decisions, but the country has lots of resources and a really rich and beautiful people and culture who are hardworking and who are resilient. So if we can figure out how to tap that spirit, I think Haiti's future could be bright, but right now it's a dark moment. So I think for Funkose in particular, continuing to do what we're doing and showing that we can withstand this moment right now, that is the most important thing, because I think when institutions are crumbling all around, it's that that peach and purple branch in your community that you go to for your loans or your savings or your friendships and your remittances, maybe a little bit of healthcare. It's those things that, if they remain constant, become like beacons of hope, and I think that's what we need to continue to show, is that we're not going anywhere.
Thank you for listening to Voices of Hope. Funkose has been empowering families throughout Haiti for nearly 30 years with the tools and supportive services needed to break the cycle of poverty. To discover more about our impactful work, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at Fonkoze, or visit our website at fonkoze.org.